GPS can show you where you are as an individual, but sometimes we need a Venn diagram to understand where we are as a society. Welcome to the fourth episode in my Signals and Society series, where we use books and movies as a lens to examine how technology is influencing society. The first three episodes in this series explored episodes of The Twilight Zone and Black Mirror, and I will link to a playlist of them at the end of this video. In this episode, we will examine society today through the lens of three books written between 1931 and 1953. All three books are considered literary classics and masterpieces of political and social commentary. Together, they form what many people call the dystopian trinity. They are cautionary tales written in the 20th century to warn us that individual freedom is the first casualty when authoritarian powers perfect their methods of control. I share the same mindset and commitment expressed by Thomas Jefferson when he wrote, "I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." In this video, we will discuss three distinct methods of control and forms of tyranny perfected by the authoritarian powers in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, George Orwell's 1984, and Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. Full disclosure, this video was inspired by Dr. Neil Postman's 1985 book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, which will be the subject of a future episode in this series. Let's begin with the best-known and most influential book in the dystopian trinity, 1984. It has been translated into at least 65 languages and has sold more than 30 million copies since it was published in 1949. The book was set, as the name implies, just 35 years in the future in 1984. It tells the story of Winston Smith, a low-level party employee who works for the Ministry of Truth and who is responsible for rewriting historical records so they appear to support the agenda of the government. While he outwardly conforms to the will of the government, known as Big Brother, he begins committing small acts of rebellion, such as keeping a forbidden diary and falling in love with a woman named Julia. But the constant, ubiquitous surveillance he lives under leads to him getting caught and taken to the Ministry of Love, where he is subjected to severe abuse until he is psychologically broken and loses his will to resist Big Brother. 1984 gave us a new vocabulary for discussing surveillance, censorship, and propaganda. The term Big Brother was introduced as a euphemism for government because it felt more like an older sibling looking out for us rather than strangers telling us what we can and can't do. The term Orwellian is synonymous with situations or policies involving oppressive control, distorted language, and/or constant surveillance. The whole concept of thought crimes and the thought police were introduced by Orwell in 1949, and they still exist today, as demonstrated by Florida House Bill 945. This bill was approved by three House committees earlier this year, and it targeted people whose views or opinions were deemed a threat to the interest of the state. Watch my video, Enemy of the State, if you want all the details on that bill. 1984 also introduced the propaganda concept of doublethink, which involves encouraging people to accept contradictory beliefs to condition them to not questioning shifting narratives. 1984 also introduced us to the Ministry of Truth, the government agency responsible for propaganda, censorship, and rewriting history to meet the needs of the present. Some people compared the Department of Homeland Security's short-lived Disinformation Governance Board in 2022 to 1984's Ministry of Truth. Brave New World was published in 1931 by English writer and philosopher Aldous Huxley. It has been translated into over 28 languages, but I couldn't find estimates of how many copies have been sold. However, it is listed on the top 100 best-selling books of all time. Huxley's grandfather and brother were both prominent biologists, which likely influenced Huxley's writing. Brave New World was set in a seemingly utopian world around 2540 AD, after science and technology had solved all of mankind's problems. Families and deep emotions were obsolete after having been replaced by hatcheries where genetically engineered babies were mass-produced, in the exact proportions needed in 1 of 5 rigid cast, from the intelligent alphas destined to be future leaders to the dim-witted epsilons destined to hold menial but necessary jobs for a functioning society. Regardless of caste, people were conditioned from birth to be happy, productive, and unquestioning. Everyone was also given an endless supply of mood-boosting drugs called soma, which instantly eased any physical or emotional discomfort. Fahrenheit 451 was written and published in 1953 and has been translated into over 33 languages and has sold more than 10 million copies. It depicts a future in which books are banned and critical thinking is considered dangerous. The heroes of the story are the firemen, who, in the name of public safety, raid private homes and burn any books they find. Most people considered books obsolete and spend all of their time watching wall-sized television sets while being completely disengaged from meaningful conversations with other people. They are also disconnected from nature and have never even engaged in any intentional, mindful reflection with themselves. The story centers on a fireman named Guy Montag, who secretly begins to save and read a few of the books from a home he raided and was supposed to have burned. As he begins expanding his mind through reading the contraband books, he starts to realize the emptiness of his own life. Before I compare the methods of control used by the authoritarian powers in each book, I need your help. This summer, I am going on a 19-city public speaking tour across the western United States. I will be speaking about the rapidly expanding surveillance infrastructure in America and how to legally and effectively push back on the erosion of our constitutionally protected rights, and I may be joined by some special guests along the way. If you live near any of these cities, I want to meet you and your friends, your family, your neighbors, and coworkers. If you can assist me with finding a venue or setting up local media or podcast interviews before my tour stop, please email me at businessreform@proton.me. Now let's summarize these three cautionary tales. In 1984, authoritarian powers bring about conformity using pain and fear, while in Brave New World, conformity is achieved using pleasure and conditioning. In Fahrenheit 451, authoritarian powers use mindless distraction. In 1984, the methods of control involve surveillance and censorship, while Brave New World relies on consumerism, hedonism, and government-provided mood-altering drugs. Fahrenheit 451 relies on electronic media saturation and the suppression of written thought. Let me know in the comments, if you can only pick one, do you feel like society today is closer to Orwell's 1984, Huxley's Brave New World, or Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451? In 1984, people comply because they are brainwashed or afraid. In Brave New World, people comply because the system makes them comfortable. In Fahrenheit 451, people comply because they are so drowned in distraction that they no longer even realize what is missing in their lives. When people lose connection to nature, to others, and even to themselves, they lose the roots that anchor a meaningful life. What remains is a lonely, shallow existence that is easy to entertain, easy to pacify, and easy to control. The role of technology is different between the books as well. In 1984, technology is used to monitor people. In Brave New World, it is used to keep people passive. And in Fahrenheit 451, technology is used for public safety, to keep people distracted so they don't engage in any dangerous critical thinking. And finally, the path to dystopia varies from book to book. In 1984, dystopia was brought about through political totalitarianism. In Brave New World, the dystopia was built by what we would today call a public-private partnership, where political control was merged with a technocracy. And in Fahrenheit 451, political control was allowed to metastasize because people were too distracted and disconnected to work together to stop it. One of my favorite quotes is often misattributed to Thomas Jefferson, but it was John Philpott Curran who said, "The condition upon which God hath given liberty to man is eternal vigilance, which condition, if he break, servitude is at once the consequence of his crime and the punishment of his guilt." The word technocracy simply means ruled by experts, and it involves a system of government where technical experts and administrators have a dominant role in decision-making based on lots of data, including your personal sensitive information. If you want a comprehensive step-by-step course on how to minimize your digital footprint and reclaim your privacy, I encourage you to use my affiliate link, escapethetechnocracy.com/reform, to get 10% off on great privacy books, courses, newsletter, and privacy consulting services. I met and had lengthy conversations with the two founders of this company last month, and I trust them. That link again is escapethetechnocracy.com/reform. I began this video with a Venn diagram of the dystopian trinity. Every day, I see the surveillance infrastructure of 1984 being built right before our eyes, with Flock's AI cameras, Ring video doorbells, halo sensors in public restrooms, smart streetlights, and automatic content recognition on smart TVs. Every day I see the mindless distraction and social disconnection of Fahrenheit 451 as people ignore others within touching distance of them instead of engaging in meaningful conversation. And perhaps most disturbingly, I have read some of the writings of the prolific Israeli author and frequent WEF speaker Yuval Noah Harari, whose ideas on genetic engineering and humanity in general remind me of Brave New World. Quote, "Human history began when man created gods. It will end when men become gods." What exactly does he mean by that? Quote, "The upgrading of humans into gods may follow any of three paths. Bioengineers will take the old sapiens body and intentionally rewrite its genetic code, rewire its brain circuits, alter its biochemical balance, and even grow entirely new limbs." Oh, that's all. For a minute there, I thought he was going to suggest something extreme. But I find his description of and solution to an entire class of people to be among the most disturbing things he has written. Quote, "In the 21st century, we might witness the creation of a new massive class, people devoid of any economic, political, or even artistic value, who contribute nothing to the prosperity, power, and glory of society. This useless class will not merely be unemployed, it will be unemployable. What will the useless class do all day? My best guess at present is a combination of drugs and computer games." According to Penguin Random House, Yuval Noah Harari's books have been translated into 65 languages and have sold over 45 million copies worldwide. For all these reasons, I believe as a society, we are currently here. But we don't have to stay there. Alcoholics Anonymous has been around for 91 years and has helped literally millions of people improve their lives through their 12-step program. Step one of that program is to admit you have a problem. Friends, as a society, we have a problem. As a society, we are less connected to nature and spend less quiet time in reflection with ourselves and less time in meaningful conversation with others than previous generations. We have failed to exercise eternal vigilance over our government, and we are quickly losing our freedoms as a result of our collective negligence. However, I remain optimistic we can turn this around. Step two of the AA 12-step program is to accept we cannot fix our problem as individuals working alone. We need a power greater than ourselves to restore us. That power greater than ourselves is often understood to be God, but AA allows people to interpret that phrase more broadly, such as the power of a whole group of people working together, or the power of truth. Divide and conquer is a strategy that predates written history. Totalitarians have used it for thousands of years because getting people to hate and fight each other is both the quickest and the easiest way to rob them blind and steal their freedom while they are being suspicious of and arguing with their neighbors. Try to make a habit of talking to people you disagree with in person rather than letting the internet tell you what they are like. I bet you share 10 times more in common with them as people than you disagree with them about on political or cultural issues. If we can unite as a free people, we can change our destiny as a society. If you live in or near one of these cities, please come out to meet me this summer. I don't believe anyone wants society to be where it is today. What are your ideas on how to change where we are today to somewhere we would all rather be? I can't wait to read your comments.